The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Welcome to the big broadcast, everybody. We are going to be talking about homelessness and housing here in the county. Joining us are Rebecca Carmen. She's with housing. She's the housing services manager. And, of course, Lisa Horn, the director of community and social services, talking about social housing. The big initiative, of course, the big announcement that came from the feds recently, $13.2 billion is going to be spent to create and repair affordable housing units. A lot of money that needs to be spent, that's for darn sure, especially here where we have one of the lowest vacancy rates in the province. Before we get to the conversation, as always, we like to play a song related to the conversation. Here's Hey Good Hearty and The Homecoming. That's Hey Good Hearty, of course, and The Homecoming on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. And, you know, here in the county, The Homecoming, man, for some people, that's not a reality. For other people, it's a fleeting reality. Joining us in the studio this afternoon are Lisa Horn, as I mentioned, and Rebecca Carmen. Rebecca is with Housing Services. She's a Housing Services Manager. And, of course, Lisa Horn is the Director of Community and Social Services. Welcome, ladies. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very happy to have you here. And Rob, very happy to have you here as
Thanks,
well.
Dave.
We're going to let you lead off with the first question. Actually, the first question I have is, how excited are you about this announcement from the federal government?
Well, I think it's a wonderful opportunity. It's very early days in terms of understanding some of the details of it, and we're just slowly starting to get some of that information and having some of that shared, but I think it's something we want to certainly be paying attention to.
When you look at it at first blush, are there things that seem to fit with what's going on right now in the county, just even very quickly as you look it over?
I think, you know, when we think about the affordable housing strategy that we're looking to develop here in Northumberland, that there is certainly an opportunity to begin to build some of the initiatives within this plan, early days looking at it, to be able to tie some of that programming and opportunities to some of the strategy that we would like to implement.
So tell us a bit about the affordable housing strategies that you're working on, because I know it's been fairly active since January and there's been a lot going on. So could you just bring us up to speed as to what's been happening over the last few months?
Absolutely. So what I would say is Rebecca has been the lead. She's the project lead on this particular initiative. And when we've released the RFP, of course, now we're working with a consultant on that. And maybe I'll just ask Rebecca to talk a little bit about some of the next steps that we're working on.
Sure, I'd love to. So what we're really looking to do with the affordable housing strategy is look to ways that the county and member municipalities can encourage and incentivize development of rental housing across the county using various planning tools and different kinds of things like that. What that will allow us to do is look at ways to encourage housing development outside of the historical very deep subsidies that have been provided and through provincial and federal investments.
Does that mean that you're looking at building new housing then, or are you looking at old models? Because one of the things, and this is something I talked to Lou Rinaldi about during the election, and also David Piccini, you know, one of the things Ontario did before they went on this building binge back in the 70s was they knew there was a shortfall. So they were doing things like buying vacant houses and using them in what they called their scatter home project, which was, you know, subsidized housing in neighborhoods, pre-existing neighborhoods, where a vacant home would come up, the municipality would purchase that home, and then that home would be then let out, if you will, as an affordable housing unit. Is that something that is being proposed or even looked at or discussed at the county level at this point?
Within the affordable housing strategy, we're in very early days of its development. Right now, we're really in an information gathering process. I don't think we're opposed to any sort of idea. We need to know really what the need is in the community, the type of housing, the number of units, and that's going to vary from municipality to municipality.
So when I heard you speak earlier, you talked about incentivizing development. That strategy has been taken in the past as well, where we tried to work with the private sector to create affordable housing, and it hasn't worked very well over the last 10, 20 years. Why are you still doing that and not doing something different? How do you see it being different now?
I think that it's different now because we're looking at, there's new tools that have come through from the provincial government within the Planning Act around inclusionary zoning, secondary suites, intensification, density. There's different opportunities now within the various planning tools that municipalities have to help incentivize rental buildings. We also don't know what we need to do to incentivize housing, and that's part of what the strategy will look at. Is right now we don't know what would be required from the from a developer's perspective to do that. And so that's what we're really looking to figure out what we can do and what that would look like.
But are you also talking to the people who need this kind of housing to say, you know, is this what you're looking for, or is this what you're comfortable with? I mean, are you doing both sides of the coin here?
Yes, of course. Part of the strategy is a very wide-ranging strategy that will include affordable, looking at what we need to do that's affordable at a variety of income levels, including the lowest income percentiles all the way up to higher or mid-income, someone maybe entering the market, someone looking to start off a career, and what we need to do to attract workforce. So it'll be both. We are currently looking to survey people with lived experience through community agencies to better understand what affordability looks like and other supports that might be needed to keep them in their homes when they find the homes.
One of the issues that we have seen though with affordable housing in the past is that you know, we've seen, because of course affordable housing tends to be, you know, you go, you get on the list, you apply for affordable housing, and then you qualify through whatever the regimen is. But what we have seen is sort of an aversion, and not just here in this county, but across the province, there's sort of an aversion on the part of people who provide affordable housing to provide housing to people who they know are going to be there for a long time. Okay, and this is something I've seen firsthand, where we see people who are, you know, they've got an opportunity, they get into the affordable housing, which of course is geared to income, and you tend to see people who are more likely to move up in terms of what their rental expense is going to be, as opposed to people who we know that are on either an ODSP or a social services. I mean, you deal with community and social services, so you know what I'm talking about when we're talking about generations of people on assistance. And what we have seen, and as I say, not just here, but in other jurisdictions, we've seen, well, we don't really want to get people into the housing that we know are going to be there for, you know, the lifetime of their kids, you know, 18 to 20 years. What we're really looking forward to is getting people who are going to be in the system for maybe 4 or 5 years, and maybe then they can get themselves into a different style of housing. Yeah, it's going to have to be more affordable for them, but then we can move away from the geared to income housing. That tends to be the strategy. At least that's what I'm hearing from people out there who have been waiting on waiting lists. They're saying, well, it looks as though because I'm going to be on the system for, you know, most of my adult life, or at least the lifetime of my children, 18 years in some cases, that I'm sort of being pushed aside for people who they tend to favor. And this is what people are telling me. These are anecdotal mm-hmm. stories I'm hearing from people who are saying, you know, they'll let someone who's going to be, you know, working at a minimum wage job with the possibility of escalating their income, those people can get a place, they can find a place on the list. But people who are going to be on assistance for the time that they're living in these homes, they're the kind of people that aren't necessarily getting into these homes, and these tend to be people who really do need those houses. So, I mean, is that something you're hearing, and how do you counter that argument?
I think part of the understanding is that there's a whole spectrum of housing needs for mm-hmm. different incomes. So part of the portfolio that we look at social services in our housing is rent geared to income housing. So in order to get into any social housing unit, it's a chronological wait list. So the source of income wouldn't be a prioritized factor so long as you qualify for housing at any level.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one aspect of the affordable housing stock, and that meets the spectrum of needs. So there's also affordable housing for individuals who can maybe pay a little bit more, or we are also looking at things like rent supplements. There's all sorts of strategies and work being done right now to try to figure out how we can respond to the system as a whole,
mm-hmm.
including a landlord engagement strategy. There's all sorts of things that the county is looking to do to be able to respond to all of the different needs. There's not going to be one solution for all of it. It's a very complex system with mm-hmm. different sources of funding, with different expiry dates and things like that, that we're looking to try to sort through. Our wait list isn't getting shorter for social subsidized housing. And so that's part of what we're looking to navigate, and helping people stay in their homes where they are, if that's mm-hmm. possible, and help to prevent homelessness and divert from those systems.
Is there too much in the strategy, though, that's being given to developers, though? Because it seems to me, and again, I'm looking at Coburg is an example where, you know, we apparently at one point had a deal with a developer who was going to build some housing above some storefronts in the center of our town. And they were saying, okay, well, we're going to build so many units, but the town said, well, we want so many of those units to be affordable housing units. And they said, yeah, no problem, we'll do that. And then they turned around and didn't do it. Like, it hasn't been done. Right, so we're seeing that there's a willingness on the part of municipalities, and a willingness on the part of the county, and a willingness on the part of the province. But when it comes to a genuine willingness on the part of developers, yeah, that's not really happening. But it's getting a lot of lip service. We're hearing a lot of great things about how they want to work with these developers, but developers really don't appear to be on that page. And I mean, is it fair to say that developers at this point are driving the conversation? I mean, is that an unreasonable statement?
I don't think we know really one way or the other. We have had some private developers really interested in looking at what is affordable, but also looking from a business perspective mm-hmm. of how they're going to end up, how they're going to be able to make those payments, and it's a business. But the other piece with this affordable housing strategy is that these incentives wouldn't be things that would exclude a nonprofit from looking to develop or or any kind of other people looking to develop housing. It would be things for the development of purpose-built rental writ large.
Well, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, Rob, you have the next question, I promise. We'll be right back, listeners.
Hey, North Ireland, Jumpin' Jody here, inviting you to join me for the Saturday Morning Confusion, heard every Saturday from 9 till noon. I'll be playing the best music of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and don't miss my segment of Things That Make You Go Hmm. That's Saturday Morning Confusion, 9 to 12, right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
It's Saturday Morning Confusion. If you think you can sleep, it's illusion.
Hi, I'm Teresa.
And I'm Heather.
We own Spark Toys in downtown Coburg.
The coolest little toy shop in town.
We've been open for 5 years now.
And are pleased to offer you a great selection of quality toys.
Books, puzzles, games, art supplies, puppets.
Our clients love that shopping at Spark is fun.
And easy.
Our amazing staff offer personal shopping.
With gifts that are wrapped and ready to go.
Making you look like a rock star at every event. Spark, smart toys for cool kids. 7 days a week in downtown Coburg.
And don't forget, like us on Facebook.
In 37.
Bingo!
Was that a bingo?
Come on out to reserve your office or birthday party at Hometown Bingo. Each member of your party will receive a free dabber, drinks, and a $5 coupon to purchase bingo paper. Give it a try and have a fun-filled evening with your friends and colleagues. Who knows, you or one of your party members might be a big winner. Call 905-372-5427 to reserve your party today. Hometown Bingo, 884 Division Street, Coburg. Our license number is 8623.
Missed one of the programs on Northumberland 89.7 or want to hear one again? It's as easy as going to the podcast section on our website where you can listen or download your favorite show. It's all at northumberland89.7.ca.
All righty, and welcome back. My guests in the studio are Lisa Horn. She's the Director of Community and Social Services here for Northumberland County, and Rebecca Carmage, who is the Housing Services Manager. She's also the point person on this particular issue. Rob, I know you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Dave. I'd like to just follow up on a point that Dave was making. He was talking about the role of developers, but I also want to talk about a bit about the role of citizens, in particular in opposition. We had, over the last year, a proposal in Coburg to convert a house into apartments, and there was quite a bit of citizen opposition in that case. How are you planning to go forward by bringing in all the components of the community so that we can get affordable housing, because we are in a desperate need for affordable housing and a range of it, as you've identified. But how are we going to get to a point where we're not going to be, every time we go to convert something or we go to build something, citizens are going to be in front of the councils complaining?
Well, I think that's a really interesting point to be considered, and certainly something that we're looking at. Part of the conversations, I think, is also talking with some of our planners and developers. I mean, in social services, traditionally, these are departments and areas that we haven't always had some of those conversations. So we're beginning to learn from some of our partners in the county, or partners with our lower or member municipalities, some of the staff there with their planners. Like, what are some of the things that they're seeing that create those barriers that could help us? And some of the observations they're making is around just the challenges with where property is. If somebody in a community has had an open field behind them for years, then of course there's always going to be that feeling I'm losing something because of that. Mm-hmm. So it's really focusing on how do we look at density as a potential in terms of the building, in terms of increasing our stock if we are intensification, and working with our planners around different language that we're not necessarily used to talking about, but they can help us with some of that in informing and educating, because we have had a number of affordable housing builds throughout the county, and for the most part we've had relatively little resistance to any of those builds. And as we go forward, you know, developers and real estate agents will tell you these kinds of things aren't reducing the value of the properties, they're not impacting the communities. So I think some of it's the education, mm-hmm. and I think it's also being able to offer back to those citizens, what is it that you need if you're losing perhaps that field behind you or that green space? How do we incorporate those things to make the community a little bit more thriving and for everybody? And I think to Rebecca's point is it's about that broad spectrum. It's about affordable housing, attainable housing. It's about allowing young people into the market. I think we were talking earlier about rent-geared income. When I first came into the business, a lot of the talk was that through rent-geared income, it was that opportunity for people to save, to be able to move themselves along the spectrum if they wanted to be able to save that money to get into that affordable home ownership opportunity. And perhaps those are some of the things that we're not able to do because we don't have affordable housing. People aren't able to move along in the spectrum. And I think for a thriving community, and if we want to continue to have our young people coming back, or we want to continue to be able to have our seniors in the in their homes and thriving in their homes, we need to be able to understand the needs of all of those residents, and then how do we help to begin to tackle some of those issues?
So we've talked a lot about developers and municipal leaders and others, real estate brokers, and that's all fine. But what about people who are at the very lower end of this scale? I haven't heard you talk a lot about how you're consulting with them and hearing their needs. Can you explain to us what you're doing on that level?
For sure. So I think part of that was one of the things that we are doing is we have a survey for people with lived experience that we are relying on our community agency partners to help fill out. We've established a working group for the affordable housing strategy that does include representatives from community agencies that advocate for individuals at the lowest end of the spectrum who need the most deep subsidies for affordability. We also are relying on our recent data and our recent initiatives through homelessness enumeration and different things like that to encourage what we would need in housing, and not just what we need in terms of housing stock, but also what kind of support services would be needed to keep people housed. And then further from that, what are the barriers that individuals run into that may have led them to a situation where they do not have housing or they're at imminent risk of losing their housing, so that we can look at the types of things that will be required in the various types of housing that will support that.
Now, we've just seen recently with the fire in Port Hope, where we've had a need to put people in an emergency situation into housing. Can you bring us up to date as to what's been happening there? Because I understand that, you know, the Red Cross moved out, and there were still people a few weeks ago that were still in the Comfort Inn, and they still hadn't found anything. Can you bring us up to date on what the status is of those individuals?
Sure. We've been working very closely with a lot of the community partners and with the municipalities or community-based agencies to coordinate the information and the resources so that individuals that need support or need help as they're moving along are able to get to the right sources. So there have been a number of Q&As that have gone out. I think if we go back to the beginning when the incident first happened, part of that response was an emergency management response, and part of that is the municipality calling on the Red Cross to help do some of the initial assessment of needs. From there, they've continued to have Salvation Army as sort of the lead in terms of dealing with any urgent or priority needs as things have come up. The community themselves rallied around a lot of these folks with their initiatives for the fundraising, and right now Salvation Army is coordinating the donations and the motel stays or the urgent priority needs of those individuals.
Are there still individuals in hotels right now, or has everybody been placed in some housing?
I'm not sure of everybody's location at this point. When they reach out to us, if they need our services and are reaching out to us, we're providing the services that they need. Right now, we're relying on that network of community-based agencies. So if they need legal advice, if they would go to the legal center. If they have urgent priority needs, they would go to Salvation Army, if they have issues in terms of looking for housing, they could come to social services or they could come to the help center. So there's a number of ways that people can empower themselves to be able to get some of that information.
So somebody listening might be a bit confused, because when stuff like this happens, often people say, phone the county, you know, the county's at the center of this. You guys, all the funding funnels through you. Why is it that you're not directly involved then in helping these people find housing if you're the people that are behind it all?
I wouldn't suggest that we're the folks behind it all. I think what we do is help to coordinate some of those emergency, some of those responses. We're sort of in the situation where these things happen as an isolated situation related to the fire. So the municipality responds in terms of the protocols they have in place for emergency management. And then what happens is, of course, as people need resources, our normal resources, as the situation, if you will, normalizes in terms of we're now moved beyond the Red Cross and now we're into people needing resources, that's when, you know, individuals make choices as to how they need to access help. Some people will not come and access our services because they have friends or family. Many of the individuals that were in the fire situation weren't accessing our services before, so many of them have gone on to do the things they need to do. But certainly if they required our services, they could reach out and engage with us.
So one of the things that this brings to the fore again is the need for emergency shelters. And we've been quite a while without an emergency shelter in the county. Can you bring us up to date as to the status of that?
So a couple months ago, as you know, we did release an RFP for homelessness sheltering services.
Right.
We are currently still within the procurement process that we have to respect. So what we are hoping is that very shortly we will have a announcement to make and some long-term plans.
So my understanding was is that there were two groups that stepped forward to make an initial proposal. I believe one was out of Peterborough and the other one was the transition house that we had here in Cobourg. My understanding also is that the first one from out of Peterborough has dropped away and you're still dealing with the transition house. Is that correct?
I can't comment.
Why not?
It's still within the procurement process, so we're still bound by that level of confidentiality at this point.
Can you at least give us any indication as to who and what? Is there more than one? Are there others involved, or is it just still the one operation?
I think what I can safely say at this point is that we're looking forward to being able to make an announcement very soon and a response to the RFP.
Okay. I'm also interested, we talked earlier when you were talking, Rebecca, about incentivizing, but you also mentioned something about subsidies. And I wasn't clear on what exactly you meant. Are we going to still see programs under the affordable housing strategy that will subsidize rents and housing in the same way? Or are we going to go to a very different system? That will be, I don't know what it might be, but you mentioned earlier different models. Are we still going to see the county helping people pay their rent?
Yes. So I think really what the difference is, and it gets really into the root of the weeds, I suppose. So when we talk about rent geared to income, when we talk about that kind of subsidized housing, often we're talking about social housing. Mm-hmm. When we talk about affordable housing, we're talking about rents that may be legislated as part of their agreements to stay at a certain level. It may be that we're looking at rents that are just attainable for somebody making a living wage on the jobs that are available in our community. What can they pay in rent? And that is what is affordable. Mm-hmm. So they're a bit different. So yes, social housing continues. We do know that the end of operating agreements are coming, and so things will change. But social housing and subsidized housing will remain a priority in a portfolio of the county.
Well, just so the listeners know, you can go to the Northumberland County website. It's northumberlandcounty.ca. They got some great information on their housing services. If you or someone you know would like information about affordable housing options, for instance, in Northumberland County, you can also check out the affordable housing survey that is available online, and also subsidized housing. As to the question Rob has, I mean, housing services has also established a rent supplement agreement with some private landlords whereby eligible applicants from centralized wait lists may be offered accommodation in their privately owned buildings. This is something they're doing in Toronto as well, where they're subsidizing people's rents, right? So a very important aspect. But also, as mentioned just a moment ago by Rebecca, I mean, we have county-owned subsidized housing units that include apartments, townhouses, and semi-detached homes. We have non-profit housing units that are owned and operated by the municipal or privately non-profit organizations, as well as cooperative housing units that are collectively owned. So all of these things are options here in the county. These are things that are currently in existence. And again, if you need more information on this, you can always go to the Northumberland County website. It really is a great fount of knowledge. Also, there is an affordable housing strategy, which is being taken place. This is from a media release on May 16th. With local housing prices at an all-time high and a chronic lack of affordable rental stock, affordable housing options are an issue of concern. The average vacancy rate for Northumberland County currently sits at 1%, compared to a healthy vacancy rate of 3%. Furthermore, the average local resale price has increased by $100,000. That's since 2016. So again, these are all things that are putting, if you will, a pinch on what people can afford.
Well, that's a really interesting point you make, Dave, because one of the things that is interesting about affordable housing is the way that the funding flows through. The county is very critical from the provincial government's point of view in terms of being able to funnel monies down to the county level so that we can get those to go flow through to the municipalities to create affordable housing. But what about the groups? I mean, we were talking earlier about the Salvation Army and the role that it played during the fire and the Greenwood Coalition. These groups fundraise completely separately from you, and do they receive any monies from the county at all to support the kinds of works and the kinds of services they're providing you in as part of this partnership?
So with the Salvation Army, they're actually a really critical part of our emergency response when it comes to the motel units that they offer, so through the motels. So we've relied very heavily on Salvation Army during this time when we haven't had an emergency shelter. So absolutely, we're working and supporting that particular program. Collectively, as a network, a lot of our community-based agencies are working together and sharing information around how we can best support.
But are they getting money? That's what I'm asking.
Salvation Army is funded to provide services for motel stays.
So you pay them just per person for each stay, or do they get a chunk of money every year from you, or how does that work?
Well, every year we work with them to come up with a service agreement that makes sense, and particular things are included in that in terms of being able to fund and support folks. Originally, with the shelter in place, it wasn't as used as much the motel system, so we're hoping once we get things up and running again and we begin to be able to build our homelessness response from our emergency shelter out, that some of those motel stays will be lessened and some of those opportunities for people to be moved on quicker will happen.
So you give them a pot of money that they use to pay for a hotel or to pay for something like that. Am I understanding how that works?
Basically.
Do you give any other supports of money? For example, there are lots of agencies that you deal with. You talk about having multiple partners. Do you flow any funding down to those groups to help them in their work in dealing with homelessness and affordable housing?
So when we do our, it's all part of our annual budget planning. So basically through our community CHIPI funding, Community Homeless Prevention Initiative funds, as well as county funds that are provided through the annual budget, we are able to offer and work with our community agencies on very specific programs. But again, they are measured, they're evidence-based. We're looking to look at what the outcomes are. We're constantly looking at quality improvement. So we work with a lot of agencies like Cornerstone or Salvation Army, to name a few, Help Center, different agencies like that, to be able to fund specific programs that help to resolve homelessness or help to move things forward around.
What about the grassroots groups, though, like the Greenwood Coalition, for instance, who've done a lot of work with, say, people at the hotel in Port Hope, for instance, and also another initiatives with their storefront location? Are they getting assistance from the county as well, then, for the work that they do?
Currently, we're not funding them, no.
Okay. Rob?
Yeah, I'm also interested. Port Hope Mayor Bob Sanderson has been talking a lot about social housing and wants to integrate it as part of his overall strategy for his municipality, which he's indicating is separate from what the county does. How does that affect what you're trying to do with your housing strategy if he's looking to have his own initiatives and his own programs at his level of municipal government?
I think it's I think it's seen as an opportunity both ways, because for us as the county level, it certainly is a signal to us that there's a real interest in that municipality to engage. And I know in conversations we've had with staff there, and just through some of the work that we've been doing there, it's both ways. So I think the effect will be positive, because we'll be able to build a strong engagement with that community.
Well, on that note, we're going to take our second break of the hour. When we come back, more of our conversation. Our guests in the studio are Lisa Horn, who's the Director of Community and Social Services for the County of Northumberland, and working with her very closely, Rebecca Carman. She is our Housing Services Manager, and she is sort of spearheading, if you will, the approach the county is taking with regards to the view, but also with regards to providing housing services in general. We'll be right back.
Tune in to Modern Jazz Today, a weekly show that focuses on today's jazz improvisers and creators, cutting their teeth and cutting the edge of sound. Join us as we explore what's new, what's groundbreaking, and where it's happening. Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Hi, I'm Teresa.
And I'm Heather.
We own All Creatures Great and Small,
your natural pet care specialists.
We have to tell you about a product we introduced a year ago.
CBD oil. Our clients are telling us it has changed their lives.
Arthritis, insomnia, anxiety, chronic pain.
These are just some of the issues that people and pets are addressing.
It's safe, effective, Canadian made.
And there's no THC, so you don't need a prescription.
All Creatures Great and Small. We're your local source for quality CBD. 7 days a week in downtown Coburg.
And don't forget, like us on Facebook.
Entering Stonewood Gallery is like visiting old and dear friends, but friends with impeccable taste. Here you'll find we feature the work of local and Canadian artisans, from custom furniture to antiques, wood turnings, jewelry, fine art, photography and giftware. It's all at Stonewood Gallery, just north of the 401 at 3311 Burnham Street North. Wednesday through Saturday, 10:30 to 5. Come in and be delighted.
It's politics with passion and more. It's The Drive Time with Dave Glover on Northumberland 89.7.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Drive Time. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. And we are speaking with Lisa Horn, Director of Community and Social Services, and Rebecca Carmen. She is the Housing Services Manager for Northumberland County. And we're talking about housing here in the county. We're talking about affordable housing for the most part. But really, with a vacancy rate as low as we have, we're talking about housing, period, at this point. I mean, I mean, even for people who've managed to find themselves a decent place to live, oftentimes the bulk of your income is going to rent, right? And I mean, this is one of the concerns I know at the Ministry of Community and Social Housing, as well as the Director of Community Services. I mean, it must be very difficult for you to look at people who are coming in, they're living on a very fixed income, social services, let's face it, people on either ODSP or on Ontario Works. They're not making a pile of money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for them to spend, I mean, in some cases, I mean, I know people who are getting, you know, $1,200 a month on ODSP, their rent's $975 a month. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's virtually nothing to live on. So how does somebody in that situation navigate an environment where, let's face it, most landlords aren't looking for somebody who's on some form of assistance or ODSP, right? They don't think of those people as reliable tenants, right? They're looking for people with jobs. They're looking for people with quote-unquote a future. So how do you help people in this county then deal with what would be perceived by many people as a prejudice?
Well, I think what's really interesting is, again, we're looking at the opportunity of increasing our stakeholder. Everything you've said is absolutely an immediate challenge, and I wish we had quicker, faster answers for those individuals and those mm-hmm. needs. And so, what we're hoping to be able to do is to begin to look at some foundation so that we don't begin to continue to just do Band-Aid or scattered responses. And so I can appreciate that at times it must feel like a very slow process, but I think if we can be thoughtful and take some time to put some of that foundational work in place and understand our stakeholders, and one of the stakeholders is absolutely landlords. Mm-hmm. And so we're, and maybe Rebecca could talk a little bit more about some of the work that's being done around landlord engagement and the starting of a strategy in that respect.
Yeah, I'd love to. So we're working closely with the Help Center and their housing resources to really look at how we can begin to develop a landlord engagement strategy. We're at the very beginning of this initiative. I'm sure people are getting tired of us saying we're at the beginning of planning these initiatives. Mm-hmm. So we're working with the Help Center along with other community agencies that form the advisory committee. And we're looking to do a survey of landlords that will also feed into our affordable housing strategy to look at what kind of incentives would they need to rent to folks who they may not normally rent to. We're looking for the total number of private market rentals that are out there. But we also know that the market right now, without any new new rentals being developed, it's so competitive. It's very hard to get into. You know, recent stats from the Canada Mortgage Housing Corporation tell us that there's been only 15 new private market rental units brought online across the county since 2015. So that's not a lot of new units. So what that means is that that's contributing to our vacancy rate, that's contributing to our high cost of rents. So what we're really looking to do is find ways to bring, you know, any new rental into the spectrum to help work mm-hmm. those pieces out. Some of the other things that we've done as a county is through the provincially and federally funded social infrastructure fund, we've launched a housing support program which supports people with monthly rental subsidies to support the high rental costs in an effort to stabilize their housing. So it's not a permanent subsidy. Mm-hmm. So what we really are looking for is it's with internal caseworkers that they're providing intensive case management for folks to help them find avenues to stabilize their housing so that they can afford it over the long term, whether that be looking for something new, whether that be getting into rent geared to income, if it's to help over a hurdle with employment and different things like that. So that's been really helpful too. We've launched that in 2017, and we've been able to support over 100 households with that, with monthly rental subsidies in those programs.
I just have one follow-up to that. I'm sorry, Rob, I keep cutting you off here, man, but I mean, we've, because I've seen this here in Coburg. I mean, the there seems to be, and I don't want to, I'm just going to call it NIMBYism, but it's not NIMBYism on necessarily the part of people in the community. It's almost a NIMBYism on the part of town council. I mean, they don't want that level of engagement. They really don't want poor people living in Coburg. They would really, I mean, this is the impression I get from the county, not the county, but from our elected officials. I mean, I look at the way Port Hope treats people who need affordable housing. I look at the way Hamilton Township, I look at the way Cramie treats people who need affordable housing. I mean, I've been told by people straight up, well, if you want affordable housing, you should probably move to Coburn, because there isn't any being built in Coburn.
So is that something when you're talking to the lower tier municipalities, what are they saying to you? I mean, Dave's under this impression that they're not keen on having this. What do they say to you when they're talking to you?
I think we have a lot of support from our member municipalities overall. We've gone...
Is that genuine support, though, or just lip service? I mean, seriously. I think that's a fair question.
Well, I think right now what we're experiencing is a lot of support in terms of bringing even the fact that we're able to bring this affordable housing strategy forward. The fact that... the mayors of all the different municipalities are supporting that their staff become involved in helping to support these strategies mm-hmm. and the education. So I think it's one of those things where they're just trying to understand themselves, what are the needs of their communities, because they're all somewhat unique in their communities, and how do they find those balances. So I would say right now we're in a really good place, and I think we have a really good opportunity to build that conversation. And we're in such early days, but the support is definitely there, because you know we got the green light to go ahead and engage in this. And this is a significant investment of staff time and energy mm-hmm. to try and bring this forward. So I see that as a really positive step forward.
So when you're sitting around the table and debating this, because something, Rebecca, you mentioned that really caught my ear was this idea of subsidizing. And we've seen, you know, for example, business owners with the vacant space will not rent it out in the downtown retail space because they get a tax break. When you are giving people subsidies for rent, doesn't it distort the market, and so that nobody's really inspired to charge less or to do less? Maybe, you know, it would be better if they did price themselves out and they had empty space rather than forcing people to pay these exorbitant rates. I mean, do you ever debate this kind of stuff around a table?
Well, I think the unfortunate piece is that there are probably places that are renting right now that the rent is so high for what you're getting that it would shock mm-hmm. all of us.
Yeah.
But with the vacancy rate as low as it is and the need for housing as high as it is, there's not people are renting those places. I don't think that they would stay vacant, which is partly why we're looking to build some high quality rental market to help those things out. But yes, we always think through the various impacts of possible programs and decisions, and you know the risks that may come with a temporary housing subsidy, and that's why it's really required for that intensive case management piece to help stabilize that, so we don't have we're not doing more harm in the long run.
But isn't that a good argument for governments to step in and start building affordable housing en masse so that people do have an affordable place to go and live and then create this additional housing that we need so desperately rather than this negotiating back and forth and trying to get everybody on board? Why don't we just build some so that we can have the space? I mean, I'm sure there are people out there thinking this is what the solution should be.
Well, and I think what's interesting is that when I started in housing few years back, there wasn't, it was just rent geared income. They weren't talking a lot about affordable housing. They weren't talking about rent subsidies. The federal government was looking at pulling out of those kinds of things. So I think what we see now is that it is a conversation and it's happening everywhere and people are beginning to understand and we know more. We know more about what homelessness is, the impact it has. We know more about the struggles that people are having. And so I think all of those things lead us to where we're going now, which is beginning to look at how do we get these buildings built? How do we get developers on board? We have information now that we didn't have a few years ago about the health economics of all of this. If we don't start looking after our residents and our citizens and giving them places to live that are decent, safe, and affordable. To the whole point of the subsidy, as Rebecca said, if we're able to provide somebody a subsidy so they can remain stable in their home, the hope would be then we can start addressing some of the other issues and concerns that are in their lives. And perhaps by the time that subsidy is no longer available to them, they'll be in a better position to be able to support themselves. Otherwise, they're just going to continue to be trying to live, as best they can and get by. So we're trying to help by stabilizing individuals. And you're right, it's in some cases it's the short-term solution, but hopefully we learn a lot from those kinds of situations.
Well, one of the things we've seen, and we're going to take our next break here, but one of the things we have seen, it's almost an unwillingness on the part of governments not to compete with the private sector. I mean, we always like to say, the market will control pricing and everything will balance out in the long run. But right now, it's a total landlord's market out there. They can charge whatever they want for places that, quite frankly, wouldn't even meet the standard of basic living. I mean, I know places where you were renting an apartment, but you had to go through someone else's apartment to get into your apartment. And that was considered a legitimate rental space. We'll take our last break. When we come back, more of our conversation. We're talking about the housing strategy here in Northumberland County. Our guest is Lisa Horn, Director of Community and Social Services, and Rebecca Carman, who is the Housing Services Manager for the County of Northumberland. We'll be right back, listeners.
These days, it can be a puzzle where you can turn to get the news from your own backyard. This is Cecilia Naismith, and I'm helping you find out. Northumberland 89.7 takes pride in being your truly local news source. Tune in for the scoop on what's happening near you, on the air, and in more detail on our website. We report the stories, and we also go beyond the headlines and talk with the people who make things happen. You deserve to be well informed. Let Northumberland 89.7 be your go-to source for local information.
Hi, I'm Teresa.
And I'm Heather.
We own Spark Toys in downtown Coburg.
The coolest little toy shop in town.
Grandparents are telling us how much they love Spark.
Aunts and uncles, too.
Spark makes shopping for kids of all ages fun and easy.
With unique, quality toys that you can't find just anywhere.
And that mums and dads will appreciate and kids will love.
For super busy grandparents, we can have your gifts wrapped and ready to go.
Just call us. We're happy to help.
Spark. Smart toys for cool kids. 7 days a week in downtown Coburg.
And don't forget, like us on Facebook.
Don your kilt and wear your spawn with pride during the 55th annual Coburg Scottish Festival and Highland Games with a free ceilidh at Victoria Park in Coburg Friday, June 15th. Register your team for the tug of war and enjoy musical performances by Coburg's own Busker Brothers and Madman's Window. The fun continues Saturday, June 16th with the 55th annual Highland Games. See everything from pipe bands to Highland dancers and championship heavy events. For details and tickets, go to coburghighlandgames.ca.
A wide variety of music and unique programs covering many areas of interest. That's a Northumberland 89.7 difference. Check out our complete program schedule anytime at northumberland89.7.ca.
All righty, welcome back. Rob Washburn is in the studio with us as we ask you, the listeners, to consider this. We got about 6 minutes left. Our guests are Rebecca Carman and Lisa Horn. Rob, you have the talking stick.
Thank you very much, Dave. It seems to me you talk a lot about communication. You're in consulting, you're surveying, you're doing all this kind of stuff. I'm curious in terms of the number of people that need to be part of this conversation. I mean, we're not just talking about poverty activists. We're talking about the health center, mental health, the health unit, all these people that are involved. Why do we not have a social planning council in Northumberland? I know a lot of jurisdictions have this kind of thing where so that everybody can sit around the table and develop these strategies so it's not left only up to the county, but everybody gets an opportunity to take a run at it.
I think those are wonderful opportunities, and I think you make a really good point. It would be wonderful to begin to look at planning in that direction. And I think part of my experience having been with the county for a number of years is just that maturity within the county as groups have begun to come together, have begun to understand what their mandates are, have begun to understand each other's. So, you know, I think it would be a really interesting opportunity to start going in a different direction where we are. I think informally we're starting to have some of those conversations as well.
And I think the other one, that there are some committees that we rely on that have representatives from all of the agencies you've just referenced. We have the Northumberland Affordable Housing Committee, who has helped us do a lot of public education. They've been to some member municipality councils to give some awareness around what the current housing market is in their municipalities. They're a key partner. We had the 20,000 Homes Advisory Committee, who helped us design, develop, and implement both of our recent enumeration counts. Mm-hmm. And we have other throughout the other sectors within social services, within early years, and different places like that. So we do have and rely on our community agencies to provide us with that advice and the insight.
I guess I asked the question only because earlier you mentioned how housing is part of a greater puzzle in solving the issue around poverty. Mm-hmm. So I asked the question only because you recognize that while you do consult on these individual issues, that it's when we start to look at it, it's in its totality that we actually get to take a stab at actually maybe remedying the problem then rather than just chugging along.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, I've mentioned the county website that the listeners can go to. Also, the survey that is available online, you can sign on to that one as well. And really, the more people that take part in that survey, the better it is in terms
Absolutely.
Of getting the information, right? I guess the last thing, we got about 40 seconds left. What is the one thing you can say to people who are in Northumberland County right now, if you can in 40 seconds, that might offer them some sort of hope, at least that there is something coming down the pipe?
Well, I think the fact that we have so much support for the affordable housing strategy, that we're hearing from our member municipalities, that we're hearing from the community, that the engagement from the Northumberland Affordable Housing Community or the 20,000 Homes Campaign Advisory, mm-hmm. United Way, we're really beginning to talk and we're really beginning to understand the issues. And I think also, you know, we're beginning to get signals from the provincial federal government that there's a willingness and an interest in reinvesting. And so the challenge for us as our community is to come together with the kind of information they need and the data mm-hmm. they need. And that's what we're trying to do right now, is collect the relevant information that's going to be needed to be able to start looking at some of the solutions coming forward. So the conversation is very positive, and the information, we're learning more and more every day about what the needs of our community are and the impacts if we don't start working together on solving some of these issues.
Well, thank you so much for that. My guests in the studio have been Lisa Horn, Director of Community and Social Services for Northumberland County. With her, Rebecca Carman, Housing Services Manager for Northumberland County. Rob Washburn, of course, is our community producer. You've been listening to Consider This on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. And a reminder that we don't write the world at Truly Local Radio, but we do bring it to you each and every day. Here's Madman's Angel.
I've seen the city lights that shine so bright, you lose all sense of time. I've wandered ancient lands with castles grand, just to see what I could find. But never have I found such peace, no matter where I roam, as in the green hills of Northumberland, the place that I call home. The way the waves fall on the sandy beach, the boardwalk full of smiles, the shades of green along the countryside, the hills go on for miles. And everyone you come upon will smile and say good day. You're in the green hills of Northumberland, and you're gonna walk.
bring the best. The smell of fresh baked bread flows through the air, and I'm feeling truly blessed. And the music blows throughout the land like nowhere that I've known. Through the green hills of Northumberland, the place that is my home. The place that I call home.